If it ever felt like your mind was playing tricks on you, you might have been right. While most of us like to think of ourselves as rational and truthful, our brains work in a way that sometimes can deceive us and others, on a daily basis even. Those lies can range from an interaction at the coffee shop to our romantic relationships, and oftentimes they can actually be helpful. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about the way our brain works sometimes to deceive us? Have you noticed the role of self-deception in your own life or seen it on a bigger scale? Do you have a routine or ritual that you know doesn't actually do anything to make life better, the world better, but for some reason you do it and it helps you? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Shankar Vedantam is the host of Hidden Brain, which airs Saturdays at 2 p.m. here on the Ideas Network. He's author of the book Useful Delusions, The Power and Paradox of the Self-Deceiving Brain. Shankar, thanks a lot for joining us today.
I'm so happy to be here, Rob. Thank you for having me.
Well, I've had this thought, and you write that you have to, if we could just all be reasonable people and only work with the facts and the right stuff, we'd all get along and solve our problems. Not that simple, it turns out.
Yeah, not that simple. And we see lots of examples of it in our lives. You know, certainly in the news media, we've all had the experience of fact-checking a politician and sometimes coming up with, you know, thousands of corrections to things that a politician may have said and seeing that it has almost no impact whatsoever. The only people whom it convinces are the people who didn't like the politician to begin with, and the people who like the politician largely ignore what we say in the media. And that's a small example of a much larger phenomenon, which is that as we go through our lives, Rob, very often we look and see and hear and remember what it is we want to look and see and hear and remember.
Part of the problem is this, if it's a problem even, is this fundamental thing that our brain does. And this kind of blows my mind to think about it. When I look around the room here, I think I'm seeing everything and taking it all in. My brain is actually kind of finessing things to save processing power. What's going on there?
Yeah, so many of us think of our brains as functioning like a camera or a microphone or a filing cabinet, that our brains are basically taking in reality for what it is. But in fact, that's not the case. And if you thought about it for a moment, you'd realize why that couldn't be the case. There is so much going on around us all the time that, in fact, it would not be functional for us to actually see reality for what it is. The most practical and simple example I can give you is what happens as you look out through your eyes. You know, at any given moment, the human eye takes in about 1 billion bits of information. Only about 1 million bits of that, so reduced by a factor of 1,000, are sent to the brain. And the brain then discards most of that and keeps about 40 bits of information in any given moment. And so it's basically taking in 1 billion bits that come in through the eye, and the brain processes about 40 bits of that. The vast majority of what we see, what the eyes take in, are sort of essentially ignored by the brain altogether. And the reason for this, you could argue this is a delusion, but in fact it's functional because it helps us basically not take in things that would overwhelm us. And it also helps direct us to things that could actually be useful for us to pay attention to. So our memories, for example, of the past are not an accurate and complete recollection of everything that took place in the past. They're in many ways a selective recollection of things that took place, often with a view of guiding us, guiding our actions, behavior, and our thoughts in specific directions.
And at another level, our brains can deceive us. You give a lot of examples in the book of cases where our minds lead us to be maybe more optimistic about one thing compared to reality or more pessimistic. Why would we evolve to have brains that want to kind of, you know, ease away from the truth from us from time to time?
Yeah, I'm glad you used the word evolution, because in so many ways, I think our brains are the product of evolution. And let me give you the simplest example that in some ways will make things really clear of why it is evolution has woven self-deception into the brain. And the example I want to give you is the issue of parenting. We've all known, those of us who are parents, but also those of us who have parents, which is all of us, how difficult it can be to raise children and how challenging it can be to raise children. And when parents think about their children, especially when a child is born, you know, most parents have the experience that I had, which is you imagine that your child, this baby who's born to you, is the most special child in the history of the universe, a miracle beyond all miracles. And of course, when you step back and look at it, you know that this possibly can't possibly be true. It cannot be the case that millions of parents, each of whom believe that their children is the most special child in the universe, it can't be that they're all correct. And yet this is a very useful delusion for us to have as parents. And you know, the answer is sort of blindingly obvious of why this is. Parenting is so hard, it's so difficult, it's so time consuming, it's so expensive, that it helps for parents to have delusional beliefs about the uniqueness and specialness of their children. And this, in fact, goes back long before humans arrived on the planet. Parents who had a cavalier attitude toward their children, those children would have been less likely to survive and pass on their genes. And so parents who selectively saw their children as unique and special and miraculous were more likely to invest the resources and time in raising those children. Those children, in turn, were more likely to pass on their genes to subsequent generations. And in turn, self-deception essentially becomes embedded in the brain. Now, I want to be careful. I'm not saying that self-deception is always a good thing. There are numerous cases you can point to that show how self-deception can be very dangerous and very troubling. The point that my book is trying to make is that we've in some ways ignored another side of the equation, which is all the ways in which the self-deceiving brain can be our friend.
Shankar Vedantam is with us talking about his latest book. It's called Useful Delusions, The Power and Paradox of the Self-Deceiving Brain. You can hear him on the Hidden Brain radio show Saturdays at 2 here on the Ideas Network. Join in at 800-642-1234 if you have a question, maybe an example for our guest of how our brains can delude us, for better or worse. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Well, one setting you focus in on at one point is healthcare. And of course, I think being a reasonable person, I want my doctor, nurse, whoever to give me the straight story. Don't sugarcoat it, doc, except in many cases, you point out when it is sugarcoated, people have better outcomes or at least suffer less. How does that work?
Yeah, when most of us experience illness, it is not just the biological experience of illness that we're experiencing. We're also experiencing the psychological effects of what it means to be sick. Think back to the last time that you were sick, you know, really felt sick. You know, you probably experienced feelings of loneliness and isolation and fear and anxiety and all of these psychological correlates of what it actually means to be sick. This is why when we turn to doctors for help, when we turn to the healthcare system for help, we're often not just turning to what they know as scientists and as experts, we're also turning to them as human beings. All of us have been to doctors who are very skilled and knowledgeable, but in fact are not very compassionate. And we find that we do not fare as well when we have those doctors. We gravitate towards doctors and nurses and physicians and other healthcare workers who extend compassion to us. There have been a wide variety of studies across many different domains of medicine that show that patients who have an optimistic view of their own conditions, their own disorders, their own diseases, their own disabilities, these patients tend to have better outcomes. Some of the studies have even shown that you might even live longer when you have a terminal illness if you have a positive outlook on your own situation. And again, this is not to say that we should trust every doctor or that they cannot be, you know, con men and swindlers and cheaters in medicine who basically lead us astray with fake cures. All of that is absolutely possible. But it is to say that I think when we all fall sick, we are right to seek out the insights and lessons of science. We are right to seek out the best hospitals, the best doctors, the best experts. But we're also right to seek out, in some ways, comfort and care, the things that our self-deceiving brain needs to make us feel whole once again.
And you mentioned fake cures, but a lot of times fake cures can really help. I mean, there's placebos, and I'm a big believer in placebos, but this blew me away. Placebo arthroscopic surgery for people with arthritis. Tell us that story, please.
Yeah, so the placebo has been known for a very long time to be a very powerful intervention. You know, there are many pharmaceutical industry studies testing new drugs where the trials essentially fail because people on the placebo arm of the study do as well as people who are receiving the actual drug. Now, when that happens, typically we think, okay, this drug is ineffective, it doesn't work. But really, it would be more accurate to say the effects of the drug are limited to the placebo effect, which is not zero. The effects of the placebo drug, the placebo arm, are usually not zero. We've typically thought of placebos in the context of medications. You know, you take a sugar pill, for example, when you have a placebo. But the placebo is not really just about a pill. It's really about all the things that a medical system can do to help you feel better. And in fact, there's some research that shows that even when it comes to placebos, the bigger and the more dramatic the placebo, the bigger and the more dramatic effect the placebo can have on you. And when you think about different interventions in medicine, you know, surgery might be the ultimate intervention, the ultimate, you know, medical intervention, where it has a lot of drama and theater. You know, you're actually operated on in something called an operating theater. And there have been studies that have shown when it comes to disorders like arthroscopy, for example, you know, there are surgical procedures that are widely used around the world. But some studies find that if you do fake surgeries, in other words, you're subjecting some people in the study to the real surgery and some people to the fake surgery, people who receive the fake surgery show tremendous improvement. Now, again, I want to be very clear. I'm not suggesting that all surgery is about the placebo effect. I'm not suggesting that real medications are not better than fake cures. That's not what I'm saying. But I am saying that in many ways, as a medical systems and as a healthcare systems, we often undercount and undervalue the importance of the psychological experience people are having when they're sick. And by underestimating this, we're removing from our quiver one of the most important interventions we have to help people recover and get better.
We're picking up our talk with Shankar Vedantam, host of Hidden Brain, author of the book Useful Delusions, The Power and Paradox of the Self-Deceiving Brain. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Rebecca is with us in Madison. Rebecca, hi.
Oh, hi.
What did you want to ask about, Rebecca?
As I was listening, I was thinking, well, I wonder, are some people better at self-delusion than others? Are they happier than people who are not as good at self-delusion? And what about people who suffer from depression? Does that have anything to do with self-delusion? Are they worse at self-delusion?
Rebecca, great questions. I want to throw this to Shankar.
Yeah, those are really profound questions, Rebecca. People have actually struggled with these questions for many, many years. You know, initially, 30, 40 years ago, it was believed that people who were mentally healthy were seeing the world accurately. And people with mental disorders, especially disorders like depression or anxiety, were seeing the world with a delusional pessimism. But recent studies over the last 20 or 30 years have actually challenged that view. And they've challenged the view in a very surprising way, I think, because they've actually found that in many, many domains, people who have certain mental disorders, especially disorders like depression or anxiety, might in fact be seeing the world more accurately than people who are, quote unquote, mentally healthy. And this body of research has argued that seeing the world optimistically may in fact be part of what it means to be mentally healthy. So when someone is suffering from depression or anxiety, part of what you want to do is not so much tell them, here is what the world actually looks like, but to change their perspective on the world so that they start to see more of the upside. They start to see the glass as being more half full rather than half empty. And I think that's really a powerful way to sort of understand how the self-deceiving brain works, because it turns out that when it comes to mental health, seeing the world for exactly what it is might not be a prescription for the best mental health. In fact, all of us have been through a terrible pandemic for the last 12 months. All of us have probably experienced moments of great fear and worry. Some of us have actually lost loved ones. Maybe some of us have lost jobs. Many of us are worried about our health, our communities. Through all of this, we've all found various rituals and ways to keep us healthy, to keep us hopeful for the future. I know for my own part, every month of the past year, I've told myself that liberation was 30 days away. And the fact that I could imagine that liberation was 30 days away helped me in some ways, you know, survive and cope with the difficulties of the past year. And you could say, well, it was clearly delusional to believe, you know, in April last year or May last year that the pandemic would be wrapped up in a month. And the answer might be yes, it may in fact have been a little delusional to have imagined that things would be wrapped up quickly. But in fact, it may have been a source of mental health to basically imagine that if all I had to do was hold on for a brief amount of time, things would be better. This speaks also to the idea that you see in many you know, alcohol addiction recovery groups or people who are in prison for long periods of time, they often have the aphorism, you know, take it one day at a time. And the reason you take things one day at a time is not because taking things one day at a time means you're seeing reality more accurately than if you see, you know, the future 20 years at a time. It just as it becomes more manageable if you see your future one day at a time. So in some ways, it's a mental hack. It might be a delusion, but in fact, it might produce better outcomes and better mental health. That's a great question, Rebecca.
Thanks a lot for that call. Sharon from Appleton emailed to ask, could you please discuss this topic as it concerns religion? And I think you can, Shankar.
Yeah, so I think there's been a lot of study looking at sort of why it is that religions have evolved over the centuries. You know, there's hardly been any human culture over the last several thousand years that has not had religious beliefs. And certainly within the field of psychology, many people have tried to understand religion almost at the level of a really important social innovation. That religion in some ways came about to help societies of humans perform really, really complicated and difficult things that might not have been possible earlier. Some researchers suggested that religions arose at a time when human societies went from being, you know, hunter-gatherer societies, you know, small isolated groups of 100 or 150 people, to much larger, you know, agrarian agriculture-based societies involving thousands of people. And the old rules of social contact where, you know, I knew everyone in my little group and I could evaluate whether they were trustworthy or not, those rules broke down as humans began to live in larger and larger groups. And religions arose partly as a way to solve problems of trust and communication and how to keep people in line and how to get people to act in terms of the common good. So from this point of view, the belief systems of religion, in fact, regardless of whether they are actually true or not, might in fact play a deeply functional role in many of our lives. Many people turn to religion at times of great difficulty. I know in my own family, I know many family members who are deeply religious who have become even more religious over the past 12 months because turning to a higher spirit, turning to a higher power has given them comfort in the course of the last 12 months, over the course of the pandemic. So from my point of view, from the point of view of the book, I would argue that religion is a really powerful social innovation, and the belief systems of religion, regardless of whether they are factually true or not, might in fact be playing an extremely potent role in keeping us healthy and happy.
And Shankar, in our last couple of minutes, can we learn from the positive side of our self-deluding brain to help confront some of the harmful delusions that are out there, big, large-scale conspiracy theories, for example?
Yeah, so I think the model that I'm painting about the delusional brain is a model where the brain really is trying to mediate between an inside world and an outside world. And what I mean by that, Rob, is that we have a set of internal needs and fears and hopes and desires and an external set of reality that's coming in, and the brain is really mediating between these two things. It's playing arbitrage, if you will, between these two things. And when you understand delusions from this perspective, you understand that the reason the brain filters the outside world is because of our evolutionary history or because of the loyalties we have towards different groups. It does give us special insight into how you can dismantle dangerous delusions. Many of us are so upset by the content of dangerous delusions that we don't stop to ask, what are the psychological purposes this delusion is performing? And if we did, we might approach those delusions very differently. For one thing, we would be much more curious about them. We would ask the people who have the dangerous delusions a lot of questions. We would say, explain your delusion to me. Explain this belief system that you have. Explain how it works. And try and understand what would happen to this person if they were to give up this belief system. What are the losses that they would experience if they were to give up this belief system? I'm not suggesting that this would be an easy way to dismantle dangerous delusions, but I certainly think it would be a much more effective way to dismantle dangerous delusions than the approach that we take now, which is simply to confront dangerous delusions with factual counterclaims and basically say, your belief system can't be true because here are the set of peer-reviewed studies that I have against it.
Shankar, we'll leave it there for now. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me, Rob.
We've been talking to Shankar Vedantam. He's host of Hidden Brain. You can hear him every Saturday at 2 p.m. on the Ideas Network. We've been talking with him about his book, his latest book, I should say. It's called Useful Delusions, The Power and Paradox of the Self-Deceiving Brain.